Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED. From KQED in San Francisco, hi, Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, independent candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and his potential to affect the presidential election. Kennedy, it seems obvious, is going to play a spoiler role in this election, writes New York Times columnist Michelle Goldberg. But it was very unclear to me who he was going to be a spoiler for, she writes. Kennedy has just named Silicon Valley entrepreneur Nicole Shanahan as his running mate and has been polling lately at about 10% of American support. We'll look at who's likely to vote for Kennedy, a former environmental lawyer who gained political visibility as an anti-vaccine activist, and why he's drawn the attention of both the Biden and Trump campaigns. Join us. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. It was a Quinnipiac poll late last month that showed independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. polling at 13% of American support. That got more people talking about his spoiler potential. That same poll showed Joe Biden beating Donald Trump by 3 percentage points in a head-to-head race, and Biden losing to Trump when third-party candidates were factored in. But my guests, Republican strategist Mike Madrid and New York Times opinion writer Michelle Goldberg, don't believe it's so clear that it's Biden who RFK Jr. would hurt, even after CNN reported this week that a Kennedy campaign official, Rita Palma, now fired, told GOP voters her number one priority is preventing a Biden victory. Michelle Goldberg's recent New York Times audio pieces, how much of a threat is Kennedy to Biden? Welcome to Forum, Michelle.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. Also with us, Mike Madrid, Sacramento-based Republican strategist. His forthcoming book is The Latino Century, How America's Largest Minority is Transforming Democracy. Mike, glad to have you too.
It's so good to be with you.
And so, Mike, before we even get into which candidate RFK Jr. could divert more votes away from, I do want to ask you why you think RFK's ability to be a spoiler is real this year. Is it the polling? Is it something else?
Well, look, any time that you have a race that is sizing up to be this close and a third party candidate who's going to pull upwards of 5%, you know, maybe double digits, it's going to be determinative in the outcome of the race. So I think that the fragility of the coalition and the tepidness of both parties' bases are making a third party candidacy, as manifested by RFK Jr.'s right now, the biggest variable on the outcome. And there's a lot of hand wringing by both sides about which candidate is going to be hurt the most.
Yeah. And people say there are a lot of conditions that can make a third party run a big factor in a presidential race. And I'm wondering if you think we are seeing those types of conditions in 2024, things like institutional distrust, for example.
Yeah, look, I think that we're likely to see going forward more and more candidates that fit sort of the RFK Jr. mold. I think, frankly, Donald Trump fits that mold. I think Bernie Sanders met a lot of those characteristics. We're witnessing rising populism in this digital age and a dramatic erosion in our institutions and a lack of confidence and belief, not just in the party system, but in many ways, representative government itself. And that's a perfect petri dish for the rise of candidates that are not necessarily ideological, but just more populist, more anti-institutional. And I think that probably characterizes this RFK quote unquote movement. That might be overstating it a little bit, but this RFK phenomenon, I think that's what characterizes the support that he's getting. Most of where he's pulling these voters from are from lower propensity, lower information voters, people that are disengaged from the process. I think early on he was, presumed to be pulling more from Biden. I never believed that. Most of the polling now suggests he's pulling at least the same, if not a greater share from Donald Trump. And I think that trend will continue as we get closer to the election.
I was struck by the fact that you describe RFK as being a bit like Trump himself in the sense that when he announced his independent candidacy in October, a lot of his language was very similar to the type of language that we have heard Trump use. Let's hear a little bit of that. Oh, and I'm just getting a note that that cut may not be loaded quite yet, so we'll hear it in just a moment. But Michelle, I wanted to ask you if you saw similar things when you attended Kennedy's rally in Oakland late last month. If you saw reflected in the things that you heard people say there, what Mike was just saying, you know, about people who feel like they are disillusioned by the two-party system and want to see an alternative and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. And this wasn't the first RFK event that I'd attended, but I had sort of suspected that since it was in Oakland, in the famously progressive Bay Area, that I would see the part of his base that might otherwise be more inclined to vote for Biden, that might kind of have its roots on the left. And that really wasn't what I found. Huh. I mean, there was, I talked to people, there were some people who had voted for Biden in 2020, but they were definitely a minority, and even they were never going to vote for him in 2024. There were more people who had either voted for Trump in 2020 or were going to vote for Trump if we're going to reluctantly vote for Trump if RFK wasn't on the ballot. At one point, I spoke to the volunteer finance chairperson of the Super PAC supporting RFK. And she said something along the lines of, you know, people keep saying that he's taking so much from Biden, but the people at our events are mostly Trump people. Now, I understand that kind of anecdote isn't the same thing as data. And there's, you know, as Mike said, there are polls that show that RFK is going to take more from Biden, although there's also polls that show the reverse. The Biden campaign is clearly really worried about RFK, and the Trump campaign, conversely, kind of goes back and forth, but at times seems to be cheering him on and thinking that he'll be a spoiler for Trump. And RFK himself, I think, has made it pretty clear that that would be his preferred outcome. He said on CNN that he considers Biden a bigger threat to democracy than Trump. You know, as you mentioned, we saw the you know, one of the people who works for him in New York saying that what they have in common with the Trump campaign is that they're all anti-Biden. And hopefully if, you know, if RFK doesn't win, hopefully he'll help Trump win. But the thing is that when you say stuff like that, who is that message appeal to? That message, right? That message speaks to people for whom Trump is likely to be their second choice and for whom Biden was never within the realm of possibility.
Well, what were the issues that you heard really rising to the top at that rally in Oakland?
Well, the big one is the thing that RFK has been known for from the beginning, which is, you know, that he is anti, he gets very salty when people say that he's anti-vaccine, but he has long, you know, said that there is a connection. He's long falsely said that there's a connection between children's vaccinations and autism. And he was a very fierce opponent of COVID vaccinations and kind of the quote unquote tyranny of lockdowns. And that was, I think, top of mind for a lot of people at that event. But there's also just a, oh, and there was also people who are very much against American funding for the war in Ukraine. You know, Kennedy has been very kind of adamant about that, similar to Trump, although, you know, Kennedy is also more pro-Israel in many ways than either Biden or Trump, which creates some sort of ideological cross currents. But the other thing is that you just meet a lot of people who are, as Mike said, just kind of anti-system people, anti-establishment people. So, you know, one person who I interviewed who was in some ways kind of representative was somebody who voted for Jill Stein in 2016. In 2020, he voted for Andrew Yang in the Democratic primary. When Andrew Yang didn't win, he voted for Trump, right? So this isn't someone who thinks about politics necessarily on a left-right dichotomy as opposed to an insider-outsider dichotomy.
Yeah. And Mike, I think you've described Kennedy voters in a similar way. I do want to hear more about why you think sort of the conventional wisdom right now that Kennedy will draw voters away from Biden isn't necessarily how you see it. What are you looking at? What are you observing? What's making you say that?
Well, look, I think Michelle articulated anecdotally and as she pointed out, scientifically from data, from polling, that this voter is not likely to be a Biden voter. There's a lot of actually an anti-Biden sentiment, and this is much more of a populist candidacy. The people that are motivated and animated by this candidacy don't view the world through this right-left spectrum that kind of, you know, typically defines our politics. They are very much insider-outsider. Again, as Michelle said, this is populism. This is like pure populism. And I think Michelle might have been being diplomatic when she was saying there's, you know, ideological cross currents. There's that's true, but there's also kind of no ideological consistency. There's no philosophy of government. It's kind of this mishmash of different ideas that can largely be characterized as sort of countercultural or anti-establishment. Not all of them, but many of them, if not most of them. And so you see this cadre of voters, this demographic base, which again is far more compelled by Donald Trump's messaging against the swamp about how the system is rigged and everything is out to get us and I'm the only one standing in the way between you and them, you know, quote unquote them. This is the type of voter who, again, doesn't look at issues and policy issues the way I think the vast majority of Americans traditionally do. They're not looking for a party that has a philosophy of governance. They're simply finding an issue or two that meets them where they're at, which is very, again, countercultural, very anti-establishment, and they latch onto almost this cult of personality on who is going to deliver their worldview through that one or two issues matrix. So, and look, I this is not as fringe as it used to be. This is a large and growing phenomenon. It's very measurable. And there are certain issues that really catalyze this. The anti-vaccine effort, with which RFK Jr. has been very closely associated with for well over a decade now, has gotten him a very large national, passionate, emotional following. And that's what I think is really fueling most of this effort to this point.
There was also this Axios piece that highlighted how RFK Jr. was saying things like sealing the border from undocumented migrants and investigating the prosecutions of pro-Trump rioters and so on, that was actually drawing some ire from people in the Trump camp saying he's courting MAGA voters. So maybe there's that as well. Go ahead, Michelle.
Oh, and I was going to say, it's worth pointing out that he is really surrounded by a lot of MAGA people, or kind of maybe ex-MAGA people. You know, when I first went to a Kennedy event last year, his campaign was still being run by the perky, left-leaning ex-Congressman Dennis Kucinich. But Dennis Kucinich is gone. And now a lot of the people around him come from the right. I mean, it's really worth pointing out that his communications director, Del Bigtree, was in Washington on January 6th speaking at the MAGA Freedom Rally, right? So it's not that surprising that those ideas then make their way into his rhetoric. And people are used to thinking about Kennedy as an environmentalist because of his past really important work with the Riverkeepers Alliance before he turned to anti-vaccine conspiracy theories. But even his environmentalism is kind of taken this right-wing turn. So he says on a video that he posted on X.
I'm going to actually have to stop you there, and you can quote it right after the break. This is Forum. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're looking at the impact of third-party runs and the viability of RFK Jr. to be a spoiler in this year's presidential election with Mike Madrid, a Republican strategist, and Michelle Goldberg, an op-ed columnist for the New York Times. And just before the break, Michelle, you were about to quote a video that RFK had posted on X that you thought was telling.
Yeah, so this is a video that he made of an interview with himself and the kind of right-wing psychologist and author Jordan Peterson, where he says that climate change, quote, is being used as a pretext for clamping down totalitarian controls the same way the COVID crisis was, and it's the same people. And so this is someone who, you know, he's very, very concerned about pollution and purity, but he is, because he's so suspicious of the federal government, that makes him opposed to a lot of forms of regulation, and it puts him, I think, at odds with the substance of a lot of modern environmentalism.
Well, let me invite listeners to join the conversation. I want to know how you feel about RFK's candidacy, whether you're concerned he's a spoiler and who you think he'd be a spoiler for. Do you think third-party candidates will be a big factor this year, and why? And would you turn to a third party? What would make you do that? You can email forum@kqed.org. You can find us on our social channels at KQED Forum. You can call us at 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. This listener on Discord writes, "In my opinion, RFK hurts Trump more than Biden. Keep in mind, there's libertarian anti-vaxxers on the left, especially in yoga wellness circles and the Burning Man community. But overall, I guess the listener feels, as you do, Mike, that RFK hurts Trump. But the DNC in particular, or Democrats, as well as the Biden camp, do seem to be worried. Much has been made about their hire of a veteran Democratic operative, Liz Smith, who's devoted to battling third-party candidates, apparently. And so there's a real concern here that they could make a difference. Should we read that into their hire, or are they just being safe?
Well, Liz Smith came on really as no labels, was closing in on qualifying with a candidate. And that has largely, well, that has been completely avoided.
Yeah.
But look, there needs to be an awareness of what a third party effort can do, specifically to Joe Biden's campaign, but to both campaigns. They do pool often, if they're not ideological, and RFK Jr., I would suggest, is not ideological from both sides. The question is, who is he pulling more from? I think the evidence would suggest that it's going to pull more from Donald Trump. And I think that that's going to bear out as Biden's weaknesses starts to turn into strengths. So look, it's good that the DNC, if you're a Biden supporter, is doing this and they're keeping a watchful eye on it. They're primarily concerned because Joe Biden has, as long as he's been in office, had a really, tepid support levels with key constituencies in his base. That doesn't mean that they won't come home the same way they did in 2020 and the way they did in 2022. And my strong suspicion is they will again in 2024. But it's good politics. It's just good operationally, good campaign work to be mindful of it and monitor it and message against it and isolate it. And the good news for Democrats, good news for Biden, is RFK Jr. is doing most of that work for him. I can't see this any other way than him being defined by the one issue that has really defined most of his time in public service. Not all of it. Obviously, he started out in the environmental community. But Michelle mentioned the name Del Bigtree. Del Bigtree is a very prominent anti-vaccine activist, a massive national figure in that community. That's a huge sign of who he is trying to court. That is like 100% of Donald Trump's base, and Trump has created a real conundrum for himself because he's at both times trying to take credit for creating through Project Warp Speed, bringing vaccines online fast enough, while also suggesting that vaccines may not be the best thing for you. That doesn't go over well in a community that is just so emotionally motivated and driven by this issue. And they're going to find home, as they already are, in RFK Jr.'s campaign. That hurts Trump.
Well, let me go to caller Susan in Oakland. Susan, you're on.
Hi, I went to the Oakland event and there weren't very many people there. I don't know if your other people had that experience or had that same impression. Plus, it was mostly white people, which was really interesting. And I just think somebody who is so distrustful of the federal government should not be running for president. They should run for another office, run for the House, run for the Senate, get some experience, work from inside. Don't run for president and try and ruin it. That's it. Thanks.
Well, thanks for sharing your thoughts, Susan. And let me play a cut of RFK during an interview earlier this month on Fox and Friends, where he really is just talking about how distrustful he is and how distrustful people should be.
People want somebody telling them the truth. They believe that the government lies, and which is true. If you don't think the government's lying to you, you're not paying attention.
Well, Mike, I want to ask you about just what it takes to be an effective disruptor of a presidential election. If even you have probably no chance of winning the presidency, you want to be able to get your message out, right? So there are certain steps that have to take place, right? Kennedy has to be on the ballot in multiple states. And my understanding is that he's secured ballot access in Utah, and his campaign is saying that he has the necessary signatures to qualify in New Hampshire and Hawaii and Nevada and North Carolina. So just walk us through like what he would need to do to really have an impact, and what he would need money-wise and operation-wise, and whether you think he's there.
Well, there's many facets to that question. I think what you're asking is kind of structurally and operationally, what would be required to be disruptive systemically.
Yeah.
And by the way,
in an
infrastructure way, because that is not necessarily the only or even the best way to be disruptive. Huh. But the question remains, and so let's walk through that a little bit. Qualifying and getting ballot access in each of the 50 states is actually different in each state and requires a different level of both of sophistication and resources, money to get that done. Time is now absolutely an issue. And so he's going to have to go through all of the processes, many of them very arcane, to qualify for the right number of states to actually become a viable candidate with actually a mathematical possibility of getting to the Electoral College required number of 270 votes. This has also become part of some of the theorizing or the strategizing, particularly amongst the Democrats, suggesting maybe he's not trying to win 270 votes. Maybe he's just trying to prevent Biden from getting there and throwing the votes to the House of Representatives, which is the way our system works. If no candidate gets the 270, then it goes to the House of Representatives and the new Congress, the newly elected Congress, from the 2024 elections will determine by a vote of the House who actually becomes the next president of the United States. Maybe that's happening. Maybe it's not. I would rather, as a campaign professional, focus on kind of the main priority at hand. But having said that, with the addition of this new vice presidential nominee, this new person running on his ticket with unlimited resources, money makes most of these problems go away. If she's willing to spend the vast resources that she has, you can buy that sophistication, you can buy that qualification, you can mount a campaign, a 50-state strategy, essentially, if she's willing to open, you know, the pocketbook and actually get that done.
Yeah. Well, Michelle, let's talk about Kennedy's VP pick. This is Nicole Shanahan, known as a Silicon Valley mom and entrepreneur. And she was at that Oakland rally, of course. And I just want to play a little bit of a cut of what brought her to Kennedy and why she thinks he has the capacity to bring more people back into politics. So let's hear that.
Let me tell you why so many of us young people have turned away from politics. It's because we lost hope that change would ever come from inside the system. After all, which party wins with promises of hope and change or to drain the swamp? Things proceed as usual, declining bit by bit each passing year. So that's the reason. But the other reason is that we can't stand the phoniness anymore. We can't stand the lies.
So, yeah, Michelle, your impression of why Kennedy picked Shanahan?
Well, I think the only reason he picked her is money. I mean, right? She is the ex-wife of Sergey Brin, one of the founders of Google. We don't know how much she got in her divorce settlement, but it was, you know, given that I think he was worth over $100 billion, it was presumably quite a lot. And he is going to need a lot of money to fund this ballot access campaign. I think that the most important thing about how she got involved in this movement, you know, she might now say it was because she's disillusioned with both parties, even though, you know, she was a pretty loyal Democrat until fairly recently. She actually, I think, fell down the same rabbit hole as a lot of Kennedy voters. She has a daughter who was diagnosed with autism, which must have been, it was during the pandemic, and her daughter was 18 months and she's diagnosed over Zoom. And you can only imagine like how frightening that must have been and how frightening it must have been not to be able to get the, you know, no matter how many resources you have, not to be able to get all the expert help that you need and to find that the help that you're getting isn't working, that you're not seeing any improvement. And so she gets into, you know, alternative explanations for autism, including the idea that it might be caused by vaccines. She starts her daughter on this regime, as she described it, that includes lots of early morning sunlight and music frequencies, quote, that send a quote signal to brain cells that they can repair. So she gets really into kind of this alternative medicine world in which Kennedy is a guiding light. And what this world offers her is not just an explanation for her daughter's autism, but a plan of action that it seems like if she just follows this kind of hidden wisdom, she'll be able to fix this thing that happened to her daughter. And you can see how powerful that is. To me, she's most interesting less as a sort of politician and more as an example of how somebody with otherwise somewhat center left views could be drawn into Kennedy's orbit.
Well, my understanding is that Kennedy's campaign has raised nearly $28 million since he announced he was running. That's based on February filings. And as you say now, with Shanahan and her ability to be able to provide support to the campaign, his resources will be much greater than that. I do want to read one comment from a listener, Eloise, who takes issue with the characterization of Kennedy and his anti-vax. Eloise writes, the pharmaceutical industry has been demonizing Kennedy for 18 years, ever since he began advocating for vaccine safety. Mainstream media and politicians are all beholden to Big Pharma, and they are all complicit in characterizing him as an extremist when he is anything but. They throw labels at him instead of addressing the issues he raises. Let me go to Lisa in Sacramento. Lisa, you're on.
I believe that the question was earlier was, did RFK pose a threat to Biden in this election? I want to keep my fingers crossed and hope that he doesn't, but, you know, throwing in the, you know, being an anti-vaxxer, throwing that, I mean, it's just all these sweeping statements anyways, the lies, like the woman just said, the one that's going to be his running mate. You know, we're tired of the lies. What lies? Let's get clear about this stuff, because that's what this becomes, is these vague terms, and they're yelling things out, but there's no fact check. There's no information backing up what they're saying. What are the lies that she's talking about? I mean, now that we've shifted over to her conversation, I don't think he really does pose a threat. I want to hope that he doesn't pose a threat. And that's my comment. Thanks.
All right. Lisa, thanks for the comment. Let me go to Michael in San Rafael. Michael, you're on.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking the call. Yeah, I mean, I've been wondering if this whole campaign is just a scam, you know, to take voters that were, you know, Trump voters and divert them from going to Biden, you know, just to keep them, you know, out of play, so that in battleground states, you know, Biden doesn't get all the electoral votes that he needs. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's too much Republican money behind RFK. Some weird Bannon connection. There's just something at play here.
There are certainly a lot of Republican donors who are banking on RFK being a spoiler for Biden and have contributed to the Kennedy campaign to that effect, and others who are also trying to hold up other third-party candidates like Jill Stein and Cornel West, hoping that they, too, will be spoilers for Biden. They're polling anywhere from about 1% to 3%, as I understand it. And an interesting note about Cornel West is he also picked a VP running mate who is a Californian, CSU Professor Melina Abdullah. Mike, I want to ask you about that point about battleground states, because I know that you have been studying battleground states, Latino voting trends in battleground states for a while. You have that forthcoming book called Latino Century that looks at various ways that Democrats and Republicans have appealed or not to Latino voter concerns. And I'm wondering if you have any sense of how they're responding to the Kennedy Shanahan ticket.
Yeah, that's a great question. There's actually a really insightful piece done by a reporter by the name of Adrian Carrasquillo for Politico magazine just a few days ago that showed that there were concerns from Democratic pollsters because RFK Jr. was getting about 11% of the Latino vote.
Wow.
And that would be decisive in a Nevada, in an Arizona, in a Wisconsin, where Latino voters are now. Yeah, more. There's more Latino voters in Wisconsin than Black voters. So this, again, is one of the reasons why there is legitimate concern from the Democratic Party. But there's also, I think, most of the common sentiment is that most of this will kind of ameliorate and mitigate and go away as the race clarifies and certainty starts to fill the voids here. But there's also no question that there is a very strong strain of populism in the Latino community that is going to be responsive to all of this messaging. And look, I thought I was fascinated listening to both of the audio clips of both RFK Jr. and his running mate. The language they're using isn't just kind of kooky and fringe. It's very destructive to democracy. It's your government is lying to you. Your government is a threat to you. That's beyond just sort of counterculturalism, which it is. It's anti-establishment in a very dangerous sense. And going back to Latino voters, there's a reason why Bernie Sanders, the two American politicians that have dramatically overperformed expectations with Latino voters were Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. In many cases, they were both winning, one in the primary, one in the general, some of the most Hispanic-dense precincts in the country. And that's telling us something. It's telling us that the two-party system, the right-left spectrum as we've known it, doesn't accurately reflect the opinions of one of the fastest growing segments of the community. And that's where an opportunity for an RFK Jr. candidacy is at because of this anti-establishment rhetoric, this anti-system rhetoric, where everything from big pharma to the government to, you know, the totalitarian effort trying to, you know, use environmentalism to take away our freedoms, becomes very destructive to a democratic society.
Yeah, you know, that political piece that you talk about and that poll by Equis Research, it found at least RFK at the end of last month capturing 17% of the Latino vote in Arizona and 21% mm-hmm. in Nevada. And I don't know, Mike, if you just want to remind us just how decisive they were in those battleground states, or just how tight the margins are. Right?
Well, if everything held, everything remained the same, which it won't, but, you know, Donald Trump would have won the election because, you know, Biden would have lost Arizona, would have lost Nevada. And those will both be, you know, decisive states on the 270 map in 2024. And these are not marginal numbers. I mean, you're getting 20% of the Hispanic vote in Arizona. You're talking about flipping the outcome of that race. So, you know, and Equis Research is, you know, a very prominent, well-known, respected Democratic firm. Do a lot of work with them. Very big fans of theirs. This memo was kind of kept quiet. It was kept hush for some time because there was concern that they've got some problems in restricting this surging effort that could be decisive in the campaign.
And I should correct myself. That poll was actually taken in late February, not late March. But interesting numbers. We'll have more after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mina Kim. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. RFK Jr. is considered a spoiler in this presidential race, but it's an open question as to which candidate he's spoiling for. We're looking at why he's attracting support and from whom, with Mike Madrid, a Sacramento-based Republican strategist. His forthcoming book is The Latino Century, How America's Largest Minority is Transforming Democracy. Michelle Goldberg is an opinion columnist for The New York Times. Her recent piece for The Times is all about who RFK could hurt. She has also written books including Kingdom Come, The Rise of Christian Nationalism, and The Means of Reproduction, Sex, Power, and the Future of the World. You, our listeners, are joining the conversation with your questions and comments about RFK's candidacy, about the potency of a third-party candidate this year, and whether you would turn to a third party and why. The number 866-733-6786. Our social channels are on X, Instagram, on our digital community on Discord. You can find us at KQED Forum, and our email address is forum@kqed.org. Michelle, given the fact that you also do cover reproductive rights, and we were just talking about Arizona, I do have to ask you, since, you know, the other big wild card in this election is the role that abortion will play, and you have often cautioned us from not minimizing just how mobilizing that issue could be. How much do you think the state's Supreme Court decision that allowed a ban on almost all abortions, with no exceptions for rape and incest, how much did that change the odds for Biden a bit that could maybe help to neutralize an RFK insurgency?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit reluctant to put numbers on these because I think whatever happens in the election, the margins are going to be extremely narrow. But yes, clearly these decisions, I mean, first this decision in Florida, although I still seriously doubt that Florida is in play, but you have this decision in Florida where the Supreme Court is going to allow a 6-week abortion ban to go into effect. And there's going to be a ballot issue in November in which Floridians can decide whether or not they want to protect reproductive rights in the Constitution. And then similarly, and even more shockingly, in Arizona, the Supreme Court just allowed this 1864 sweeping abortion ban to go into effect. And there will also be, or at least there's poised to be a ballot initiative on in November that is obviously going to bring a lot of people to the polls for whom abortion is top of mind. And the thinking is that even if they weren't super motivated to go out and vote for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris while they were there, well, you know, while they're at the polling place, they were going to pull the lever for Democrats. And, you know, you've clearly seen how much Donald Trump worries about this issue in his recent, you know, attempts to posit this as a purely states' rights issue, even as he refuses to really take a position on what he thinks state policies should be. And so I think it's too early to say whether or not that's going to disenchant significant parts of his anti-abortion base, which has been pretty loyal to him because he fulfilled his pledge to appoint the judges who would end Roe versus Wade. What I hope it will do is at least is underline the stakes of this election. And speaking of RFK, we should point out that he has been pretty dodgy on the issue of abortion, which is interesting given how much kind of quote unquote medical freedom has been central to his pitch. You know, at one point he said that he supported a second trimester abortion ban, then he backtracked. Nicole Shanahan has put huge amounts of money into studying reproductive health, but has, you know, both said that she's, you know, kind of personally opposed to abortion, even though, at least in many circumstances, even though she's pro-choice. And she also, for sort of holistic health reasons, has a lot of problems with IVF, which has been something that's been thrust into the political conversation because of the Supreme Court decision in Alabama.
Hmm. Well, Mike, I do have to ask if you have seen any research on how Latino voters feel about abortion bans.
Oh, yeah. I have a whole chapter on my book on it. Latinos have always been a pro-choice constituency. There's sort of this stereotype that, you know, it's a largely Catholic or evangelical religious-based community. Mexican, especially Mexican Catholicism, which is the overwhelming number of Latinos, have never had a connection politically between, you know, the Catholic Church's teachings on abortion or marriage equality and their political voting behavior. It's just, it's a big myth. It's never been there. And as the Latino community becomes much more second and third generation, women especially are voting more like non-Hispanic white women on this issue. Overwhelming registration numbers, high turnout in states like Kansas. Kansas actually, when the referendum was on there right after post-Dobbs, the single largest demographic that showed up and supported a pro-choice position were Hispanic women, motivated to go to the polls specifically because of this issue. So the abortion issue will be a winner for Democrats on Latinos. It's one of the few as Latinos start moving further and further right. But it's something that they should, I think, feel good about in states like Arizona. Florida's not going to go for the Democrats, but it could help mitigate kind of this rightward drift that Hispanics in that state have been undergoing for the past few election cycles.
Yeah. You know, Mike, you said that you think there's a chance that Biden wins decisively, despite, you know, also at the same time we're talking about how close this race is and the role that third party candidates can play. But I'm wondering why you think that chance is out there and it's not insignificant.
Well, the fundamentals, the political fundamentals of this race have always been very clear to me that this will be a very decisive reelection for a Democratic incumbent, probably as strong as 1996. Now, that doesn't mean it will be a huge landslide, but I do believe that Biden stands a much greater chance of winning all of the states he won last time and probably adding North Carolina to that list. And the reasons are because the very few numbers of people that are actually shifting fall into basically two categories: white, college-educated, suburban Republican women. Sorry about that long, detailed description, but they've been moving to the left even before Dobbs, right? That certainly added some jet fuel to it, but they were leaving the Republican Party back when Donald Trump became the nominee in 2016. It happened again in 2018, again in 2020, then Dobbs hit. So this is not just a Dobbs dynamic. I'm not trying to underplay it, but I also want to put it in perspective. I think those that are motivated by the issue have gotten far more intense about it, understandably. But these shifts have been happening pre-Dobbs. The other group that's moving are U.S.-born Hispanic, non-college-educated males who are motivated by the economy and economic concerns far more than cultural concerns. So when you look at the state of the economy, you look at the math of which is a larger cohort, and right now it's college-educated Republican women, the math benefits Democrats. And the issues matrix is much more intense for that base of support. So it's hard for me as a we're still 7 months out. Again, all the caveats, a lot of things could happen. But for the past 18 months or so, I'm looking at these dynamics and saying this, it's very hard to see how a Republican, especially one as well known as Donald Trump, wins this race. Most polling has him at a hard ceiling at about 46, 47%. He's not adding to his coalition, and he's got a whole host of other problems coming up. So I would much rather be Joe Biden than I would be Donald Trump heading into this November election.
We're talking with Republican strategist Mike Madrid and columnist for the New York Times, Michelle Goldberg. About 10% of voters say they support independent presidential candidate RFK Jr., who has a California running mate now, Nicole Shanahan. And you, our listeners, are joining the conversation. Let me go to Kiara in Oakland. Kiara, you're on.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about the Democratic and Republican parties not really paying attention to the customer. I think that this trend is the new trend, and it is going to continue to go forward because this next generation is really not so much left or right. I think that that's the big myth. I think that people hold both ideas of left ideas and right ideas, which I hate those words in the first place, but two things can be true at the same time. And I think that that's what RFK is offering, and or any independent or anyone other than our choices right now, which are just for a generation that is under 40. It just seems absolutely insane or ridiculous to vote for either of these guys. Mm-hmm. So it definitely I think it's going to be something that both parties should take forward of, like, okay, how do we think about our, 10 toes down into being so staunchly one side or the other? I think going forward the next decade or so, it's going to look very different. If he doesn't win this time around, I'm sure that there is much more space for an independent or a third party to win.
Yeah. Well, Kiara, thanks for sharing your view. I mean, that is what listeners are wondering. A listener on Discord writes, our system does not allow third parties to win, and both major parties are experts on staying in power. And Mike, I know you've worked with a number of groups who want to establish a viable third party in the U.S. Is it possible, in your view?
Well, it's certainly possible, but it's extremely difficult, and that is by design. But both parties have actually cemented their status as two parties in the systems of these of all 50 states. It's very hard to qualify and start a viable effort. But more importantly, what the previous caller just mentioned, she really is tapping into something, and that is we're really no longer having a right-left discussion in this country anymore. And there's a real question as to whether or not the current system works in this digital age. There's not much confidence in our system of government broadly, and there's not much confidence in our two-party system. When I say two-party system, I mean the parties individually themselves, even amongst their own membership. It's why a Bernie Sanders, came so close to beating both a Hillary Clinton and a Joe Biden. It's why Donald Trump was able to upend the entire establishment in the Republican Party. I don't know that we're having the right discussion in this country anymore about the size and an appropriate role of government when there is so much obvious evidence of rising populism, not just on, I guess, the right and the left, but what could I conceivably argue as is the middle, is the, what the caller was saying is exactly right, is the debate and the discussions that the traditional politicians in both parties are having are really outmoded, and they're not connecting with the average American voter anymore. And so what we've relied on as political professionals is negativity and fear and anger as a tool to see the opposition as a threat, as a motivating tool, as opposed to persuasiveness and aspiration to try to convince people to vote for you. Most Americans now affiliate with their own parties, not because they support their party, but because they dislike so vehemently the opposite party. They're afraid of them. They're angered by them. They're motivated to vote against them. And that's not sustainable for a representative government for very, very long.
Well, let me remind listeners, you are listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking about third parties. We're talking about RFK's run with Michelle Goldberg and Mike Madrid. And you, our listeners, are weighing in. We asked you the question of how you feel about third party candidacies and who you think RFK could be a bigger spoiler for. Joel writes, "No one who ever voted for a Republican will vote for a Kennedy. Kennedy will be instrumental in ending our democracy." Another listener wants to know, what would his father think of him and the legacy of the Kennedy family? Michelle, the Kennedys have tried to show, at least the non-RFK Jr. parts of the Kennedy family, have tried to show their support for Biden, right? They've been showing up for him.
Pretty overwhelmingly. I mean, you saw this picture of the Kennedy family. I mean, it seemed like dozens of them went to the White House and posed with Biden. And yes, I mean, you know, remember, RFK Jr. was one of 11 children of Robert F. Kennedy. And so, you know, the fact that he, and I'm not sure if he has the support of any of his siblings, but certainly some of his siblings are very vocal supporters of Joe Biden. And yet what he's tapping into, I think, is this intense, and this is also something that Trump taps into, this intense nostalgia for the America of JFK, for an America that seemed like it was less divided, that was optimistic, that had this, you know, kind of singular place in the world. And RFK Jr. talks about bringing that America back as if he can do it through the kind of sheer force of his genealogy.
Well, this listener on Discord writes, I wonder if there's any data or research on how third-party candidates may bring in new voters. I remember during Bush v. Gore, a number of traditionally non-voters were voting for the first time for Nader. These voters tended to have 10 to 12 years of voter eligibility. Do you know that, Mike, whether there's much on how it brings in new voters when you have third-party candidates?
I think the last time we saw a measurable number of third-party candidates coming into the system was 1992 with Ross Perot. You know, again, these are very low information, very disassociated voters who just don't see politics as relevant, who find usually a charismatic person, not an ideology, but a persona that they can kind of rally around. I don't think that RFK meets that criteria. I really don't. I think that what he's doing is he's galvanizing this this one issue, this anti-vaccine community, which he has been cultivating for at least a decade, if not longer, and trying to, you know, leverage his name as kind of a bigger national force. This doesn't meet the criteria of a genuine third party movement. It certainly meets the criteria of a third candidacy. And I don't know, again, how sustainable that will be. You can't run a party on just being an anti-vaccine party with no cohesive philosophy around that. Is he bringing in new people into the system? I mean, presumably there are some, but it's not widespread enough to again effectuate an actual movement based on a philosophy of government or what the role of the country should be in the world. This is something very different, very unique.
Let me see if I can squeeze in one more call. Gary in Sacramento. Go ahead, Gary.
Hi, good morning, folks. I'm a late joiner. I think this is not the time for us to be tinkering around with a third party candidate. I think it's a way too close between Trump and Biden. And if Trump is reelected, we can forget about the luxury of any kind of a third party candidate. I think our democracy is in very serious trouble. And I think it's important for all Americans to realize that. And I think they need to just kind of back off and support Biden. Otherwise, we're in very serious trouble.
All right. Well, Mike, I want to ask you, since we've been talking about third parties, whether they bring in new voters, the viability and so on, what you think is the greatest value that a third party election run can provide?
Well, I mean, keep in mind, I mean, when this whole system was created, not to, you know, go back in a history lesson, but the two-party system was never envisioned, right? We envisioned that there would be multi-candidates and a whole plethora of ideas being brought to bear. I'm not saying that we need to go back to that. I'm not suggesting we need to go back to a parliamentary system. But what I am suggesting is there is something fundamentally broken with the way that we have institutionalized this right-left spectrum that has served us remarkably well. I mean, we are the most stable. We have been the most stable.
We were
democracy.
The most stable.
Yeah, for 250 years for a reason. That's being called into question now, I think in large part because we lack the diversity of political opinion to stabilize the equilibrium now. I think what used to be our greatest strength is now our greatest weakness. Mm. And unless we make that adjustment and provide some sort of opening, some sort of pressure valve to allow for these different voices, the whole thing could just crack on its fulcrum and roll over.
Michelle, you said you weren't sure when you first started reporting about who RFK would hurt more. Do you have you reached a conclusion?
I wouldn't say I've reached a definitive conclusion because I do think that the people who go to rallies are just different than disaffected swing voters. But I do think that my initial assumption, which was that he was going to pull more from Biden, has been called into question. It was called into question by the people I met there, and it's been called into question since then.
Got it. Well, this is Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.